Hey there, dudes and dudettes. Time to wax up your boards and go catch the big wave over at the LPN Beach Blanket Bingo. One night only at the Balboa Theater in San Diego, October 20th. Come and check out all of the cool cats and the crazy dogs at LPN. Every show in the entire network, each one pulsating and grinding in front of you for your entertainment pleasure. We're all gonna catch the big kahuna. And I'm talking about that big greasy guy. I'm talking about a wave.
Ew, it's seaweed. It's seaweed.
Just so you know, it's gonna be inside of a theater. So any physical wetness you experience is your own personal body heat or the sweat of one of the performers. Come and check it out. I'm certain if there's a podcast flavor you need on your tongue, we got the spoon for it. Beach Blanket Bingo, baby. Come on, girls, let's dance!
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast. On the left.
Live from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Hey, what's up, everyone? How you doing? Welcome to Last Podcast on the Left. Ben hanging out with Henry and Marcus. Today is a special day. We're doing fan Q&A. So we're so excited to read some of your questions.
Fuck you.
Okay.
Wow.
How fucking dare you? I am excited.
Yes,
I'm very
indeed.
Excited.
No, these are great questions.
They really are.
Thank you very much to everyone who submitted questions.
Not everyone.
Okay, not everyone. Thank you to everyone who submitted kind and good questions.
Yeah, have you ever thought if teeth were in your butthole, would you guys put the mic on your assholes?
You know what? That's a fair question.
That is a fair answer.
The answer is yes.
I would say no, because my tongue would need to be in my asshole for it to speak. If I had teeth in my asshole, that really wouldn't do much for speaking.
And every time you farted, it would just go...
If you had teeth and a tongue in your asshole, if you brush your teeth, do you feel like they would actually get clean?
And now that you answered it, let me point out how factually you're wrong about the answer that you gave, even though it was a joke answer.
Did you pronounce teeth correctly?
Matt wrote in, how often do you tell each other, I love you?
Oh, you went straight for that one.
Yes, because I feel like we need to set the mood with a little bit of Marcus, I love you.
I love you.
Henry, I love you.
I love you.
I love you. Thank you. So that was once.
And I love you, Henry.
I love you.
But no, truly our friend group. Because we are all capable of murder, we do like to say, just so you remember, I love you. And then you follow it up with, and now we have to go to Indianapolis. Yes.
We actually do to all tell each other that we love each other multiple times a week.
We love each other very much. Yeah. That is a fact. So
it is true.
And I say that when I do my Q&As for Hail Yourself, one of the most important things you can do is surround yourself with people that you truly respect and that you are inspired by. And that enjoy your work and don't put you down and build you up. So, yes, I love you. Ain't nothing wrong with saying that.
But that is true. We really, especially because a lot of the people we work with, you know, Murderfist, I've known now for more than half my life.
Yes, 23 years.
Oh, yeah. We've all known each other probably about 15 years.
Yeah.
And we are closer. We are more like family than we are like friends. But we're not Rob. Don't worry. I'm not saying that this is a family because it's difficult. Because I know that's weird when the boss is like, you're like my little cousin. You come sit on my knee.
It's a company.
Yeah, we never tell our employees that we're like a family here.
Do we tell our employees we love them?
Yes, sometimes.
I think that's actually a better question. And say, Rob, I love you.
I like the L word. See, some people. Yeah, I also understand because I feel like perhaps because I do say it so much, has it lost meaning? No, but it has lost meaning in the sense of like if someone says, if I say I love you to somebody and someone who never says I love you when they say I love you, I think it carries like a lot of weight.
Sure.
So I will say from that perspective, maybe it's not like, you know, I don't say it just like once in a while. I say it all the time.
Yeah.
But I also mean it.
Yeah, me too.
It doesn't mean I want to get blown by you.
Yeah.
No, because it would be horrible.
Rob? Yeah. I enjoy you.
There you go.
I'm not going to say I love you because we don't know each other that well.
But I enjoy you.
Boundaries.
He's working up to it. All right.
No, it's important to tell your friends that you love them because you never know when one of them is just going to randomly die.
You really don't. Although you, really you can don't. Assume that it will be a while. That's why in war-torn countries, I forget the term, but the Asena Ghaznavi from Fraudsters was telling me in Iran, they have a saying, which is basically means like, I'll see you if you don't die. Like cool. That's their goodbye. It's always like, if I don't see you again, goodbye forever.
That's wow. That's
but
very
that happens
heavy.
In war-torn places or places every, that are going through extreme strife.
Every bowling like meetup, like super intense.
Yeah, at the end of it, it's just like, if I don't see you again, if you're blown to pieces, okay, see you in the afterlife.
For Meat Laser One, if y'all were food, what kind of food would y'all be?
Oh, man.
Oh, God.
I'd be a steak and ale pie.
Okay.
A what?
Steak and ale pie.
Yeah, I could see it.
A steak and ale pie?
Yeah.
I could definitely.
I never heard of that before.
I could see myself as a pierogi with a little butthole and tits and a dick.
I could see pierogi. I'm going to go pizza because multifaceted. You know, get a little bit of cheese, a little sauce, a little bread. But you can put anything on it. You want to make it savory? You can, obviously. Or sweet? You truly can. So I'm going to go pizza. It's the most diverse of all the foods.
Wow.
And when I think of diversity, I think of Benjamin Grant.
Yeah.
Always. I always think of white, 6'7", in a
that's
cardigan.
Man that's 1%.
Man who never repeats himself.
No.
Never.
Absolutely not.
Not a pile of catchphrases.
No. Absolutely not. And also 6'7" does make me unique. I mean, the 1%.
That's true.
And I have red hair. 1%.
Wow.
So I'm going to go pizza. If I had to be anything, also perhaps stuffed crust. You can do so. You have deep dish. Mm-hmm. You have stuffed crust.
Sure.
You have Chicago style. Oh, that's the deep dish. But you have Detroit style. There's so many different kinds of pizza. And I feel like I really run the gamut of what can't he do?
You remember when he said that he's quiet?
I am quiet in real life.
You remember when he said that?
Yeah.
I am.
Yeah.
Marcus, back me up.
That you're quiet in real life? You can be?
Yes.
When he's asleep. But when he's asleep,
that's not true.
You can't. I mean, I will.
That's not true. It's an untruth.
I will say this. Like, when, you know, we've done hundreds of shows together at this point. And when we're backstage before a show.
Yes, he can be quiet.
Ben actually will go like an hour to an hour and a half without saying a single fucking word.
That's what I'm saying.
In that one aspect. Yeah.
That is a huge aspect. Am I quieter than Henry?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's different. I don't say I'm quiet.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't say you're quiet, but you're not quiet in any way whatsoever.
No, I'm not.
Yeah,
yes.
It's like we took when we drove to San Diego Comic-Con, both going there and coming back, there was not a moment of silence in those 6 hours.
We talked. You also a talker.
Yeah, I am a talker. But
well, you're the most quiet. You might not be the most. I'm the most quiet.
Marcus
can
talk.
I'm actually the most quiet. I'm the most quiet.
I can talk and talk and talk.
He really can. He really can.
So you just proved my point.
Yeah,
I'm the most quiet one out of the three of us.
You did not. You made that point yourself,
Marcus,
and made that a thing.
You're the loudest, second loudest, quietest.
Actually, I will say that. Yeah, actually, that is true.
In the terms of us, in terms of
that's
me,
my fucking, that's
I'm
my
extremely
parameter.
Not quiet.
But what else parameter do I have to go? I'm not, if I was hanging out with
Imagine
Helen Keller, she would win.
Imagine it's a spectrum, right? Henry, the most extreme. Marcus, just there. They say quiet's over here, right? At the very end of the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
You're still like right there.
Yeah,
you're still in the top 25% mile of noise.
That's what I have for frame of reference. So within ours, within the whole community, you want to spread it out to the whole network, I'm still one of the most quiet.
Oh, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, though.
Yeah, I am.
If we move you out of this bubble here, we put you on a bar stool, are you the quietest person at the bar? Or
it
you
depends
even-
if I get inspired. Because I will sit there for hours and not say anything, but then... when I find
because if you're not with anybody, it'd be weird if you're like, yeah, I know a story about me.
You can make friends really quick. It just depends if you want to make someone smile or cry or, you know.
You've made several grown men cry, but tell them that their business is completely drying up and it's not coming back.
Oh. They're not grown men. They're background actors in their 60s.
Oh, God, those poor men.
Oh, and, they really are. But no, they're working. They're working.
And that brings us to our next question, which Henry strangely said was controversial.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that's it. Now that all of you are living in L.A., who is the most L.A.?
Henry. You like it.
Yeah, I like it.
So I like it as well.
You grow up. People grow more accustomed
to it. No, I don't. I think you're the most LA because.
Well, I got a convertible.
But you like, you also enjoy more of the, because you're an actor.
Yes, I do.
And we could all act. It's a skill.
Yeah.
But you I like Mexican food.
Well,
I like the weather.
We like that. Well,
I like the weed.
Yes.
Like that's all my, these are things I like.
That's all very LA
stuff. At some point, you would like to perhaps have a major motion picture role.
Of course.
So this is the place to be.
Yeah. Not anymore, but it used to be.
You wear shorts all the time?
I do.
Love shorts. Yeah. Yeah.
However, I have made a large amount of my, since moving here, mm-hmm. a large amount of my wardrobe is now hemp.
Yeah, he loves hemp.
I love hemp. I'm wearing a hemp shirt right now. 100% hemp.
That doesn't make him more L.A. That definitely seems like more of what a Texan would do if they moved to L.A.
Well, it does put him more into the... I think there's something separate between Texas and L.A. It's a Subaru vibe.
Yes,
it's way more
true.
Of a Subaru vibe.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I will say, every place is what you make it. So Los Angeles, I think, if you're in the arts, you got to start in New York.
Yes, I
and
do
now
believe
I
this
think
is
it's
not
some,
a place to struggle.
No. You got to start in New York because at this point, I think you go out to Queens. Wherever poor and artistic people are, you go there. You make all your friends
there.
But
now they got cooler scenes in other cities. It's not just New York anymore.
True.
Atlanta's got a great scene for music and comedy.
But there is something, I will say though, there is something about suffering in New York.
Oh, it makes you better.
Everyone's suffering there with you.
Yes. And you're sweating and you're running.
It's great for art.
Yes,
it is. Great. That pressure and that anger and the pace, it is fantastic for art. You got to keep up. And New York is also a place where it's, you know, weirdly, it's kind of more merit-based, especially in the arts world.
A little bit.
It's way more like New York comedians are uglier and better. LA comedians are handsomer and more successful, but they are not as good. That is
not
just straight
funny.
Across.
Yeah,
that's across
true.
The board.
I'll agree
and
that.
Then there's something about just cutting your teeth and walking. You know, the great thing about New York, whether you're a billionaire, a millionaire, or just making, pierogies in a kitchen, you walk by the same pothole. You walk by the
everyone's
together.
Yeah.
And you learn so much about life and your ability to survive.
I agree.
Yeah. And so, one thing about LA that I've been here almost a year now, and don't get me wrong, I fucking love it.
Oh,
I'm
enjoying it.
I like the weather a lot more than I thought I would.
Yeah.
But it's just nothing can hold a candle to the food in New York.
New York is different. You can't.
You know what?
It's like comparing things to Rome and shit. New York's the best food in the country.
I can't let go of it. I think about it every day.
I would actually push back a little bit. I'd say I actually think Chicago is.
Well, you're officially.
That's your taste.
My real choice is New Orleans. It's got the best food in the country.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of restaurants, New Orleans still got it.
But in terms of just fucking eating, like I just need to eat. As a person who just needs to eat, that's great.
Except for tacos, taco culture and Mexican food culture in general in LA.
Oh, of course.
That's just
I can't live on Mexican food.
But yes, so all Marcus, right, least LA, Ben, middle LA, and Henry, most LA.
Okay, here we go. Here's a more serious one. How do you stay grounded while consuming firsthand information about all these conspiracy theories? And what advice would you give to anyone who wants to go down the University of YouTube hole without falling prey to the radicalization algorithm? Now, I will say I was taught a thing in high school, right, about this idea of cognitive dissonance and how you supposed to kind of, how you could hold two ideas in your head at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
What I like to do, which is kind of in the Robert Anton Wilson school of what he called like across the board agnosticism, right? I don't believe in anything too much.
Sure.
I dabble. I go back and forth. I like to, when I read in conspiracy minds, like a view in a, like whatever you'd call my fucking process, right? It's that I try to imagine how that person views the world from inside their eyeballs and what their frame of references is and why they think that way and what it is that they're saying. Because a lot of those guys, especially conspiracy world, it's in code. There's a lot of weird shit. And then kind of see how...
By the way, Jew is code for
code.
Jew.
Yeah. But I just don't hold on to anything too... Like, I see... ideas for what they are.
It sounds to me like you hold on loosely.
And I don't let go.
Don't let go. I agree with that.
Where you can read these things. It does not mean that it is real. And then also part of you understanding that it is an algorithm that you within your own behavior is curating is extremely important for you to understand about this, what I'd call like internet literacy.
My algorithm, by the way, just got me with a bunch of cow lovers. My algorithm was just a bunch of like
touching cows.
In the arms of the angels, but with cows.
Yeah. I also don't believe that any idea should be like, you should, no idea is like a throwaway idea or destroyable idea.
Yeah.
I think that there are things, obviously, except for like extreme fascist thought, but it's more like, what can we learn from that thought?
Sure.
What can you learn? And I talked about this on Sirius Radio recently with the Maui wildfires. So you can hold multiple things, as Henry said, to be true. So there was a conspiracy that they were started on purpose because the billionaires want to buy up that land. They want to make Maui a smart city. All of that is completely true. And then a couple of different things came out because China does have a space laser. And they showed these two photos. One was of what appeared to be a laser and another was appeared to be a laser. They're both from 2018.
Yes.
One is a SpaceX rocket. The other one's a fire in Ohio.
Yeah, so they're, they're making shit up
you
in
can
one
hold
way.
But the thing is, you don't want to have the spurious correlation between just because people will benefit off the suffering
doesn't mean
they caused it.
Well, it's not the plan.
That's the same thing with New Orleans. The idea that, you know, real estate developers blew up the levees.
It's the same thing with the World Trade Center.
No, but they...
However, the sad reality is, qui bono, people will benefit from human
absolutely.
Suffering.
That's just people taking advantage of a crisis.
Right. And that's just also conspiracy theory I find as a whole, where we talk about, you know, what you can often be attributed to malice. A lot of times you can attribute to incompetency.
Yeah.
Where it's like, most of the time, these guys are improvising as they go, just like any human is. And they just are wired in a way to look for benefits in bad situations. And that's what they do. They analyze these things. That's how they become billionaires. You don't become a billionaire without the suffering of thousands of people.
Yeah. Yes. So, of course, you have to hold those things to be true, but it doesn't mean you want to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah. I mean, I live by pretty much three principles when it comes to this whole conspiracy thought thing. One is, the biggest one is, of course, never attribute to malice that which can be explained by either incompetence or stupidity. That's one of them. That's the main one. Yep. Second one is Occam's razor, which is the simplest explanation is usually the right explanation. And three, using if-then logic. Using if-then logic is one of the most important tools you can have when you look at, say, a huge conspiracy. Look at Pizzagate. You look at if-then. If this thing is true, then this other thing has to happen.
For as far as I'm concerned, if another country has such a superior military technology to ours, it would not be a secret.
Yeah.
It would be a very, very public thing. Like, that's why I feel like, because they're going to show and they're going to flex. They've spent billions of dollars making this
thing. You see that space laser?
But look at what we did. We did it with the atomic bomb, and it's no different than anybody else. So I think that's when you get into this idea of like, oh, these other countries have stuff that we don't have. They'd be using them.
Yeah. Well,
I think we got the most. We got the best.
We do have the best.
But that's what I'm saying.
Always think about if then, because it's also that's kind of an OCD exercise as well, where you just keep going. And then what would happen? And then what would happen? You just have to keep going through and like looking at how massive of an apparatus these huge conspiracies would need to hide in plain sight in order for them to work. And it just doesn't make any sense.
And
most of the time,
it
makes zero sense whatsoever.
And it's not sexy, right?
No.
I think the audience, especially on the internet, you kind of want the sexy answer of it being one side or the other. I do understand that there's a constant need. And obviously, being central is such a dirty word on the internet these days, but it's important to understand the majority of humankind, even the evil ones, are center.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They have different things, what they do back and forth. Like they react to things in specific idiosyncratic ways. They are still humans.
Self-preservation.
But they are still operating within a paradigm. So they, you know.
And with conspiracy theories, you know, you can always check to see sources. You know, you can always see you can do a trust but verify thing, but you can also look and see like, okay, what sources do these people cite? Do they say
sources say
I've heard? A lot of times you'll see I read this one thing. And the biggest tell is when you see these people sourcing each other.
Yes.
That's happened a ton in Q.
Because they're
saying the truth in a way by being like, well, I've heard people say, because they're hearing the same people say the same thing about the same shit.
And they just keep quoting each other and they keep building upon each other. So always watch out for that.
I've watched conspiracy theories about me form in front of my own eyes on the internet. I have a unique
view because
of it. You
started one of the most nefarious conspiracy theories about me. Bloodline Lime, you
it
fucking...
It worked. That's called magic, and it's weird. And you should lean in for the advertising fucking additions to that.
Yes. All right. I would say conspiracy and religion go hand in hand when it comes to people that just don't want to live in the chaotic world.
The idea of having something in control.
The answers are more complex, yet more simple than you can make them.
I did.
All right.
That's what the man who coined the term conspiracy theory said, is that when man killed God, man had to look for another force in the universe.
All right.
like 1947.
Also, if you do, I don't know, you know, not to get wooey woo, and it's not really about conspiracy, but you know you're on the right path when you start seeing a lot of synchronicities. It happens about four times a year where you're like, all right, things are starting to come together.
Oh, sure.
And that's not conspiracy.
Also, it's important to make everybody mad all at once.
Gwen, well, that's just how you do it. Gwen Powell, what's your number one karaoke song?
Space Oddity by David Bowie. Okay. I'd fucking kill it.
It is You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman by Aretha Franklin.
Beautiful. And I do not do karaoke. If I had to do it, it would be I'm Mighty Proud of That Ragged Old Flag.
Live from your grave.
Okay, this one's from Kaylee Ferris. Question for all three. What was your most memorable tour experience?
When we went to that, one of my favorite ones. We've had many. We've had really great fun times. Obviously, Red Rocks was fucking crazy. The Beacon in New York meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
But when we were in Dublin and we got to go to that private bar after the show where that guy invited us over for the performers from when we performed over there.
It was cool.
We got to hang out in that cute, like that awesome, like locals only bar. And then we went and got hammered at the fucking pub. That was a great night. That was one of my favorite times.
I liked when we had our power outage in Philadelphia. That was crazy.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
It was the middle of a snowstorm. And for some reason, Philadelphia doesn't plow their streets. And when you don't plow your streets, snow melts. And that's called water. And so the entire city block went out. And we had to go. And obviously, it was sad that we missed the show. But we had to go out. And we had our cell phones. And everyone was so unbelievably polite.
Yeah, everybody was cool.
Because we had about 600 people in there.
Especially in Philly.
Yeah. And then that night, we went to a place called D's Corner Bar or something. We just had such a fun little time.
Yeah, we're in
Fishtown. So it was fun. And then, yeah, Philly's always a good time.
Yeah, I got a couple of them. And one of the big ones was like from a more recent tour when we did the Pacific Northwest. We were driving from Seattle to...
Portland?
Not Seattle to Portland.
Vancouver.
Vancouver. The smaller city, Spokane. We were driving.
Oh, yeah.
We were driving.
Well, you got to be careful with that pass. Yeah. So you're going over the pass.
Dead man's pass. It
was the pass. Like, we drove over this pass. It was snowing. We were driving basically through a forest. It was some of the most beautiful snow I've ever seen in my life. I was listening to fucking Kid A the entire time, and I just stared out the window and just felt so completely and totally at peace.
Oh, good. I thought you were shitting bricks.
I thought he was so scared.
I thought you were scared as fuck.
That's the most fun you've had, is staring out the window while we were driving to Spokane.
Yeah, we traveled the whole world.
We've been all over the world. We went to Australia.
That's just one that stands. I mean, there's
you're
of
just
course,
sitting
like,
in a fucking... We can do that right now.
Yeah, I can take you around.
But it was a moment. I don't know. I can't explain a moment.
I thought he was having a horrible time.
I thought he was scared.
No, not at all. I was at... such total and complete peace.
That Spokane show.
And that's the thing is that we ended in like that Spokane show was one of my favorite shows that we've ever done. But I've also got other shows where, like, you know, the first show we did in Chicago with the empty bottle.
I mean,
that was crazy.
I don't know if it was the empty bottle. No, it was the place that was
when we would just make shit up.
No, that was the haunted joint.
No, that was the one.
The Metro.
That's the one I'm talking about. Not the matinee show we did, but the one that we did at the bar next door. I remember it was the first time I ever got a true laugh from an audience, and it was the one.
You got more laughs. You got laughs before that.
Yeah, but they were in New York and they didn't count.
Yeah, this is when when we were doing our monthly show. Yeah. And I remember when Marcus was afraid to go on stage. You remember when you would go from the...
Now
you
we can't get him off the goddamn stage.
Yeah, I was very afraid to go on stage, but like I was so nervous and I got like a genuine laugh from the crowd, and that was the first time that I thought like, okay, I can do this.
Yeah,
like,
that's awesome.
I think I can maybe do this.
Those were magical shows.
Yeah. Same night, day, we did two shows that day that Malort really roared its ugly head into my life.
People love this Malort. They
don't
they
like
love
it. And they
bit.
Know what they're fucking. They know what they're fucking doing.
Yeah, of course, Pyro at Red Rocks is incredible.
Oh, amazing!
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The poor ADA row. I always think about that. But when we were hitting that Pyro, and it was like they put the ADA row, all these like great people like in the front row, like right like at Red Rocks. They're like 6 feet from the stage. Great seats too. Mm. But like every time the Pyro went up, I just watched their faces cook. And there was like, I think they're weird.
Pyro's hot.
Yeah.
I didn't quite realize how hot
it is.
Yeah, Pyro's extraordinarily hot.
That was awesome.
But yeah, we have traveled all over the world, like shows in Dublin, shows in England.
Melbourne, the Cherry Tavern.
So fucking
the Cherry Tavern.
That Well, I've never smelt anything quite like that Cherry Tavern.
The show that we did outside of the walls of Strange Ways Prison and the old World War II bomb shelter in Manchester, where I had to build the entire stage setup myself and only ate donuts. I asked them to go get me food, and they came back with a dozen Dunkin' Donuts. And I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you people? But the show ended up being incredible. They were smoke. And the lights were all red. The crowd was incredible.
We were within earshot of one of the number one most notorious criminals of all time.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Pans Bronson.
Ram. Yeah, was it Bronson.
Was it Bronson?
Yeah. Pans Ram was long dead by that point. Yeah.
Bronson,
but we've had so many great touring experiences over the years.
Oh, I like this. This is a cool question. What is your most impactful psychedelic experience?
Ooh. Probably trying to eat Peruvian meat in Williamsburg. Remember Mushroom Summer?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember Mushroom Summer.
That cool Peruvian place that was over by Union Hall.
Yeah,
trying
to eat like blood sausage from it. It was fucking like it, dude.
That place is incredible.
It was really good. Not when you're tripping, though.
No.
That level of blood meat.
Yeah. I've only had a couple of eating experiences tripping. And they've all like not been the food that's kind of been secondary.
Mm. I can't. I mean, there's just trip. Basically, first time I did Williamsburg.
Acid, yeah. First time I did acid, someone brought chocolate covered strawberries. And I remember them just growing and moving and shit. And I was just been like, these are bugs.
These are bugs. I think I know a bug or two. I don't know. We always bonded. We always said, honestly, maybe one of the best nights ever was when, other than our little stiff, because I was a little rude to Marcus, and I'm sorry.
Very rude.
A little rude to Marcus, and I'm sorry.
Very rude.
He was upset.
Point, counterpoint. But then Marcus did save the day by being able to hook up the audio.
No one else could, because everyone was tripping balls.
Let's not rehash it. But that night, we all tripped our fucking nuts off at the old theater we used to perform at.
Well, it was at the Creek.
Those mushrooms.
Well, I've told this story multiple times.
Those fucking messed with me. Those were great.
I've told that story, I think, a bunch of times, where Murderfist was going to do a set on mushrooms. We're going to do an hour-long set, and then this guy said, I'm your hookup. And then he showed up, and there was 8 members of Murderfist, and I mean it. He had, like, 10 individual mushrooms. We're like, this is not going to do jack shit. And then everyone ate it, and then we lost our fucking mind.
You talking about that Creek show?
Yes.
Yeah, when Trippy. That
was the night that I ended up at a bus stop, and then all of a sudden I broke away from everybody.
You went away.
Yeah, I went home, and I took off all my clothes, and I turned on the radio, and I turned on the television,
and I turned on
the air conditioning. I was watching the wood grain move back and forth, and I was pressing my face against it to see if I could feel it like it was waves of water.
Wasn't that the night that you asked the Chris Farley painting
To
release you.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I have a painting of Chris Farley, and I asked it to release me from a shadow, and then that was the night that I said I felt that I was performing in a hall, like a giant hall. I was tripping.
Well, I had a great conversation with Jackie Zabrowski that night. We realized why we would never date each other. And then we're just like, but we love each other. So that was nice. And then a lot of great conversations.
I think maybe my most impactful one was like the first one, because it was after like a happy hour, and a buddy of mine's like, hey man, I got some mushroom honey. You want to try it? I'm like, fuck yeah.
I've never done
mushrooms before.
Whoa.
And then we walked to a nearby park. And right as it was setting in, and like we played in the park for a little while, I played with like this 5-year-old kid where we were just screaming at each other. And the father was like cool enough where he saw like, oh, that's a super high college kid.
He'll be fine.
And then I wandered away from the group to a nearby coffee shop, and my buddy Clint was outside, and he's like, hey man, we're having a meeting inside. You want to come? I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, man. What's it for? He's like, libertarians. I'm like, let's go fucking talk, man.
Oh my god.
And then I walked in and I didn't take off my sunglasses the whole time. I just sat there listening, and then I got up, and they're like, Marcus, would you like to say anything? Yes. This is your first time here. And I'm like, yeah, I got a couple of things to say. And then I just...
Taxes? Schmaxes.
And I just stood up and did this whole monologue about the oneness of the universe.
Yeah,
there
bro.
Was like,
wow,
I mean, the
I wish
opposite,
I could have heard that.
The opposite of libertarianism. Like, about no, they, like, yeah, how, yeah, we're, yeah, all, how we're all, conne- how
yeah,
we're all
connected. And we need each other.
Yeah, and the, yeah.
I don't think that's necessarily antithesis to libertarianism, as long as you don't bring
exactly.
up the...
Exactly.
As long as you don't bring up the government, then they'll be like, well, now.
Well, but the cool thing about about is that I had in that moment, that is when I had the realization that we are all one. And I felt like connected to the universe for the first time in my life. And I felt connected to other people.
You connected with libertarians. That must have been strong mushrooms.
I connected with my friend Clint. He's a beautiful soul. Absolute beautiful soul. And then I went home and I did finally, because I'd always felt my entire life completely separate from other humans. I had never felt connected at all. But I finally, after that trip, I did feel connected to people. I went home, I ordered some fucking PJs.
Papa John's?
Papa John's. I put on a Don Ellis record, and then I just saw the fucking purple music come out of my fucking speakers. And then later on that night, like I was still like super fucking high, went and hung out with some friends, climbed some trees. Wow. And then like by the end of it, I was like, man, drugs are fucking great.
Yeah, that dude. That reminds me of college trip.
That really is when drugs were fun.
Yeah, it was it was nothing but fun the entire time. And and I came away from it a completely changed human being.
Yeah, I forgot the college tripping days. I hid in a bush for a few hours.
Changed my life.
It was
man.
Really great.
I remember laying down between two speakers, and then I saw the Big Lebowski appear before me, and he was trying to explain to me that like information's like not real. Like it was like a very long thing. Discs. He showed me the real nature of reality, which was a series of discs. It was fucking sweet, dog. That's I don't know what true. I saw. He was explaining to me in that this weirdly other side of me explaining about how like, you know, a lot of people work really hard and spend years meditating to get to this point. And then there's guys like you that just sort of show up here.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. Yeah. There you go. All right. From EPED 2385. If each of you could go back in time to experience a historically significant paranormal event, which one would it be and why? I actually love this. I would maybe just go with Betty and Barney, my friend.
Sure.
Hang out with B&B and just see what the fuck is going on.
You're like on the road. You park on the road.
Drinking in the back. Time,
you're literally just having a couple of buds sitting in a lawn chair at the exact place where they got
to. Hey, Betty, Barney, what you guys up to?
Whoa. Jeff the Talking Mongoose.
Wow.
I think I'd go back there. I'd go to
What are you going to do with Jeff the Talking Mongoose?
Well, it's more like I'd like to have boots on the ground, be in the neighborhood, be on the Isle of Man when that's happening and going and kind of seeing what's going on here.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I would say the Enfield Poltergeist.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's like, a scary one.
I got my rag lung.
that's like the 40s, isn't it?
No, it's
the
70s.
So that's relatively recent. Well,
it's a really sad time to be in the UK, though.
Yeah. Well,
but he loves it.
I love that. Yeah, UK in the 70s. Because that's the thing is that like I'd be there for I'd be one of the paranormal investigators. So at night, I'm in 70s London. It's fucking incredible. I think it was London. It wouldn't matter. It's a tiny country. I could make it to London whenever I want to. I could make it to Manchester.
Right.
Yeah,
I could see
around.
All kinds of incredible music at night. And I'd love to know like how much of that story really is true. Because how much of it is, you know, how much of it did they make up? How much of it was embellished? Not just for the paranormal experience, but also for what I would get to experience around the experience.
Yeah. Very and then any, I'm trying to think, we've covered like some different portals to hell. There was that in the basement there.
We got Amityville.
Amityville's just a crime scene.
Yeah, it's a crime scene.
I feel like true crime. Isn't that more? It's true crime.
It's true crime.
With the little, and then obviously they got a whole Conjuring series out of it. But
here you go. Here's a personal one.
I like that one.
What are your strategies for bringing the heat on days when you're off and you don't really feel like you're in the mood to joke? I think that's really interesting because I feel like it's a part of what the job part is.
Yeah, it's job.
But also, I do get comforted. How often I'll show up, you know, like you deal with all of this other bullshit in your life. I do get to do what I absolutely love to do for a living. I get to make jokes. I love making people laugh. It is my life's blood. It's my favorite thing. And so I do most of the time, like no matter how I'm feeling, once I'm talking, like once I'm doing it, it kind of gets me up out of it.
Yeah. But that's your jab.
But also that's where the job part comes in is that we talk about all the time when we're on the road, like we're your fun night out. Right. Like when you go out to see us on the road, like we're trying to make it be a fun night and do all this kind of stuff. And so like kind of doesn't matter how we feel because we got a fucking thing we got to do. That curtain goes up. We got to go out there and we got to make them laugh.
You
we got to do
the work.
And so that's got part of it is a little bit of nutting up. And then some of it is coffee. Like a lot of coffee.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I would say like when it comes to road shows and tour shows, like I had some of the best shows of my life when I was absolutely fucking miserable.
Always.
Like when I was like the most miserable.
Hungover. Strung
like,
out.
Yeah, just had absolutely great shows. And with this show too, it's like, yeah, you know, like we've, you know, the schedule don't stop for depression. It no. don't stop for any kind of like.
Long
like,
COVID. You fucking did an entire last year. You did a whole fucking year's worth of work.
I took a week off.
Half dying.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's amazing what, so like the work.
In, please. He was half living.
I forget. But we were working, yes. You know, like it's a thing.
But when you come in, like that's the thing. It's like you do, like a lot of people say that they listen to the podcast when they're depressed and it cheers them up. And for me, like I do the podcast when I'm depressed and it cheers me up. Yes. Like it makes me, like it's laughing about dark shit, like super dark shit.
Yes. Gets like, me out of it.
Like it helps. Like it helps us just as much as it helps you.
And Natalie loves the joke because I always do the, but doctor, I am Pagliacci. You know, like that. That's what I do all the time.
Yeah. Yes, making people laugh makes you feel good. This is our job. And we're very lucky, as Henry said, to have the job. We love the job. And we try not to bring our personal bullshit into it too much because not the real stuff, not the physical ailments and everything. I had a fucking I had two ear infections last year.
Yeah,
I thought I was going to die.
Yeah, yeah.
But my arms didn't work.
Yeah, you fucked yourself up last
year. But
last year was kind of an intense job for us.
But it is our job as performers to, we're trying to make you happy, trying to make you get through this existence, and you help us get through this existence as well.
This is from Austin Hemstad. What would y'all change your names to if you were aliens?
Man, that's a tough one because what kind
Beverly
of
Beverly D'Angelo.
Ooh, that's nice. Yeah, look at those beautiful breasts. The Sentinel. Holy shit, check out that fucking movie.
Oh, they're going to change your name to The Sentinel.
The Sentinel for aliens, but Sentinels are not aliens, right? Those mm-hmm. are just, those are
they're
non-human
demons.
Biologics.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're not demons.
Yeah, I believe in The Sentinel.
No,
demons.
The Sentinel, but I'm talking to X-Men.
They're robots.
You're talking about they're robots, yeah.
They're just robots.
They're robots.
I don't
created
know
properly, Marcus.
Created by robots.
They're robots.
Robots,
created by the master mold.
Alien name.
I would use some variation of my own name. Just I would just scramble up the last name, reverse the first one. Sukram Prax.
That's actually very good.
Very good indeed.
That's actually very good.
Very good.
I'd just be an alien name. Beverly D'Angelo.
Beverly D'Angelo, and then... you know, you always got the fun names, the Blorbers, the Glorblers, the Blothar. Well, that's from Gwar.
Yeah.
You could take that. You can be inspired by Blothar.
You can be Flowbar.
Flowbar is fun.
Flowbar is actually booked on Fridays and Saturdays. It's actually really hard to get into Flowbar, so don't even bring it up.
Yeah, don't even bring it up. I don't know. Maybe I'll just be like the old, I'll be the big wet green one. That'd be kind of fun.
The big wet green
big
one.
Big wet green one. Come on.
Have you seen
here.
Big wet green one? Yeah, honestly, yeah. I just saw him. He's all over the place.
Yeah, big wet green one. You should watch him play Red Light Green Light. He always goes on red.
Here, I like this one. All right, after all the horrible things you've read and talked about, do you think people are mostly good or mostly evil or bad?
I think people are mostly good, and that's why when they do evil, it stands out.
I agree.
What makes air quotes news. When you open the door for someone and you have enough exchange, it doesn't make the news, but you do that. If you actually pay attention to how
but if you
much
rip the door
good
off,
stuff,
and then
that's
you hit
making
the woman
the
with a yay. Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, considering just how, again, self-interested human beings are by nature and self-protective, for the most part, we're doing pretty good to even have a society because we are trigger happy.
Oh, yeah. Traveling the country is really indicative.
Except for in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, I mean, that place sucks.
I don't know why.
It's
and
troubled.
To the good people of Oklahoma
to
City,
to our fans
we love you.
In Oklahoma City, move to Tulsa.
Trust me, y'all. It's a large, large swath of the country. Like, Oklahoma City's just a part of a very, very large swath of the country that is very aggressive.
But even, I wouldn't say that they're evil. I would just say that sometimes isolated and maybe a little scared.
Traveling the country, I find that you'd be surprised. Most people, again, are in the center. Most people, I think my actual number breakdown percentage-wise is I think that 65% of human beings are absolutely normal and good and just walk around just trying to live their fucking lives. And it is the majority of people that are vaguely like they are open to other people. They just don't give a shit. They just don't really care. They don't care. They're just working on their own lives.
Well, I think good and evil, like that's way too binary. Yeah. I think what it is that like, the majority of people are like, if you just kind of put a binary choice, like good are people who don't murder and evil are people who do murder. Like, I think
it's majority the people are good, but I would say it's like 15% are good, 15% are evil, 70% are normal.
I think most people need to be taught how to not be mean. Like, sure. I think most people need to be taught how to be civil.
It's a thing that you should get from your parents.
What you learn growing up.
Yeah, but a lot of them don't.
Yeah, a lot of them don't. That's unfortunately. These days. Yeah, these days, unfortunately, we don't really teach like ethics and morals a whole lot. And that's part of the reason why Americans are so fucking mean. Read a great article in The Atlantic about it.
Yeah, I don't know if The Atlantic really covered it.
I read an article in the Pacific that said I'm handsome.
But no, it is true.
Americans are the meanest.
People need to be taught how to be not mean.
I truly believe Canadians are the meanest.
Well, they're passive aggressive.
That's the meanest.
They're passive aggressive. But it's not just Americans, you know. It's a lot of people. It's just morals and ethics. We aren't necessarily taught as much how to be nice to each other and how you're supposed to treat each other, how you're supposed to have a friendship, how you're supposed to treat your neighbor, all that type of shit. We do need to be, humans are social creatures, but I don't believe that
we're hyper-socialized right now.
Yeah, I don't believe that humans know how to be in a large society. Like, we're social, but we're not societal. You know what I mean? We depend on each other, but we have to be taught how to live a 21st century lifestyle. This is not natural. Cities are not natural for humans.
You see, I still feel like it's not about the cities. It's about the social media and how we're just not supposed to know what everybody's thinking at all times.
No,
it's
we're
just,
not.
They're just not helping.
We got that
it's
superpower, though. No, we're all helping. Professor X. Yes.
Yeah, it's just not helping.
We're not supposed to know what everybody's thinking at all times.
But I do think
I like this one.
But Kissel's correct that a lot of the reason why that there is this meanness is that I do think a lot of it is fear. I think a lot of it is people are afraid. It's weird times. They don't know what to do. And so the fear and what I've learned in therapy is that for me, somebody like me, anger is a much safer emotion for me to experience than other emotions. And so that rage is actually much more easily accessible for some of these people. And they give it to their kids. They push it down the line. And I'm hoping that there be some kind of reversal of that with the new younger age, because maybe then they can have some perspective. Like, they can look at us and be like, whoa, because they can kind of see the broad spectrum of, like, because we're the millennials are like the truly like one of the last generations to go from. We talked about this with our special guest next week. We talked a little bit about this, about this concept
going from analog to digital.
Yes. And how like our childhood as people born in the mid, I'm 1984, my childhood was a lot closer to the childhood of kids in the 1600s than it is now. You know what I mean? Like, it's a completely different world. So maybe the younger generation can kind of maybe have some more like perspective of time and distance.
Well, I'm not sure about all that. Let's go to Jay Ledbetter. I actually like this one. What paranormal experience would you most like to inflict on each other? It implies nefarious, but honestly, I would love for you to see an alien.
I think Kissel needs to get abducted.
Yeah.
Kissel needs to get abducted.
I don't want to be abducted, buddy.
Buddy.
Space babes.
Think about it, though. You would be so, because you're so,
I don't
like,
even think they'll be able to, no, I don't think they want
like,
me.
You're both like highly agitatable, but also you can like kind of, I could see you getting picked up by aliens, and I could actually see
you
freaking
in.
Out, but I definitely think you can be like, hey, I think that you actually would have a more like accepting experience of the abduction
wanted to give this to you. You don't want to be abducted?
You not abducted. I want to see an alien, because abduction is different. I think respond to someone trying to take my control harder than you do, because you have had to like let God take the wheel a bunch of different times. It just comes to your size. Like, sometimes you have to arrive and be like, I don't know if they'll let me in there.
Oftentimes they don't. All right, so you want me to be abducted. Marcus, I would like for you I just feel like it has to be cryptid related.
I knew you would.
Yeah, but is that accurate?
I would like to see a cryptid, yes.
Because you love nature. Yeah. You know a lot about animals. Yeah. And I know you love like the chupacabra and all these things, but maybe just the revelation of which cryptids are real, which ones aren't. And you get to hang out with a Bigfoot, a
Yeti. That would be incredible.
Thanks, yeah.
That'd be awesome.
That's what I would like. And to visit them in their natural habitat.
Yes, because also there's something very human about that. If you truly did, again, like the platypus was a cryptid, then they're like, nah, shit real. So you would just be like the Jane Goodall of the cryptid world.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, I could see that.
And I guess I'll be abducted, and then I guess you get to go and hang out with ghosts.
I'll see a ghost.
I wouldn't mind ghosts.
I've seen an orb.
Yeah. I kind of like the idea of just having a bunch of ghosts around.
You do.
I know.
You don't need anything. You have much choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not so scared of the ghost. Exorcists, if it's a true exorcism, that would be fucking scary as shit.
Yeah. I would like to put Marcus on because, you know, they're saying now that, so one of the big things with the whistleblower, and it's like that, again, if 1% of what he's saying is true, it could open up a lot of possibilities. So they've been talking about, what if there is a real exchange program between us and some other race, some other alien race? I'd see you doing that.
Oh, absolutely.
I could see you over to the other
side. I'm a very adaptable person.
And it's a 12-year shift.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you go 12 years on an alien planet, and then you come back.
Sounds fantastic. It's
much like that video game I'm playing.
I'd love it.
High on life.
I want to play this game.
Honestly, it is really funny. It's very funny. So whoever made it, congratulations.
Fly from your grave.
All right, I got a good one. Let me, they'll post it to you guys since we're already on aliens. You look at this. Do you guys honestly think we will get some form of alien disclosure within the next 10 years? Other than a flying saucer landing on the White House lawn, what would it take for mainstream media to actually cover it? We are seeing them cover it. At least say that. They are covering it.
They're covering it.
I don't think so.
I believe yes. I think that we're going to actually have physical evidence at some point. It just seems like they're gearing us up for it. And to be honest, everything has come so fast with the new AI digital era that we live in. Might as well just add it to the fucking pile.
I
feel like everyone at this point is really open because I think everyone is just like, what is this new world?
You say open. I think it's way more everybody's extremely distracted and they don't care because there's a lot of other shit going on.
No,
I do feel like that they could come out and say that UFOs are real, then aliens are real, and people would not give a remote
shit.
That's
what I'm saying. I think that means that they're technically ready.
Yes, I think that we might get something like that. I don't know, because, you know, again, I'm in this conspiracy theory corner here, where it's like, oh, so now I'm supposed to believe this the secret object retrieval group within the Pentagon? Oh, that guy. Oh, I'm going to believe them?
Well, but what about the fact that Elon Musk sent that stupid-ass fucking Tesla to space and then it's out of our atmosphere now? That's just... So I'm not... Maybe not an alien, but we'll get some fucking tangible shit.
Maybe.
Because someone's just... That is just going to land on some dumb fucking planet somewhere.
Yeah. I don't think that it's ever going to have... Nothing will ever hit with people worldwide as far as aliens go until it affects their personal life.
Of course.
That's the only thing that will ever make people give a shit about aliens is that if you have to take a different route to go to work because there's a fucking UFO,
then you will care.
Or if something in your personal life changes because of UFOs or aliens or whatever, then you will care. Until then, no one's going to give a fuck. They're going to go, hey, man, that's crazy.
And then they're literally going to be like, aliens are taking our jabs. We're going to see that weird shit. I feel like there's going to be a whole thing of alien racism. I think that there's that. I mean, who knows?
These aliens better not be racist. I'll tell you one thing. They're going to learn the hard way. If they come in here and they're racist, they're going to get canceled. They're going to get canceled very, very quickly.
I did see one fleeting question that tried to ask me what nailed down what I actually believe. And my problem is that, again, I'm in the school of Robert Anton Wilson. I believe in everything and I don't believe in everything. I believe that things can be entertained. You pick them up and you let them go. As for my actual core belief, I think that, you know, number one, is it egotistical to think that we're the only living creatures in the universe? Absolutely. Sure. That's one thing with it. But the biological side of it. Mm-hmm. Thing is, though, that brings me to, if they are biological and they can't arrive here physically, we are fucked. I think that that's actually really bad for us as a human being, as an animal. I think it's very bad for us. So I hope that they are biologically real and they are very, very, very far away. And that what we are actually experiencing is some form of other form of transport. I believe that they send like orbs. If it's real, and again, biological, separate altogether. It's just nuts and bolts. They're sending recon things from another part of the world to check us out and look at us. Maybe decide we're not worth it. We're out in the middle of fucking nowhere. Maybe we were part of some, because they say that we might be a part of a binary star system that we haven't seen the other star yet. Mm. It's that far out. It's supposed to come in and out. And maybe we're just some podunk, dumb shit part of the universe that they don't want to come to. So maybe there's that. Or they waiting for something. Or, you know, I was watching this thing about the Homo Naledi, which was a race of ape-like creatures 350,000 years ago that were burying their dead, which was 100,000 years before the first recorded Homo sapien burial that we have found. So they're also, David Grush, part of what his whistleblowing is saying, that the Greys might have been genetically manipulating life here since the very beginning. I don't know. I don't fucking know.
All right, they got you going. But they got you going.
That's one side of it, but then the other side of
it. Well, let's just stick with that.
Was that it's fully a psychic phenomenon, which, yeah. I think that if it's real to you, it's real. So
I don't even
really
remember the question. Now I don't remember the question.
Will you actually get alien disclosure within the next 10 years? Yes. And will the media cut? What will it take for the mainstream media to cover it?
They'll cover it.
And it really is. It's like got to become a personal interest story.
All right. My last one is, what would your childhood selves think of your current self / career / life? I think overall, I would say that this was my plan. And overall, I think he would be happy. And
it looks like you're reading a script, like you're being kidnapped.
No, I think overall, because it went through a lot of stuff. It was a lot of rough years there. And so, yeah, I think overall, pretty happy. If you got to see, because, you know.
I think that little me would be extremely excited. Yeah. And then I just also explained there's a lot that comes with the life, but it's a fun-ass life.
Yeah, extraordinarily surprised. And happy.
You knew you were going to do broadcasting. I mean, we all knew that we were going to.
Oh, I didn't know
I
at all.
Wanted you didn't think to do so? This.
No, when I was a kid, I had no idea what I was going to do. I thought I was going to be a writer when I was a kid, which is, of course, I am a writer. But yeah, broadcasting, I didn't get into. That wasn't something that I even considered a possibility until I saw a flyer for the college radio station, KTXT, when I was 18.
At six, I think I said I wanted to do comedy.
Yeah, I wanted to do comedy really young. No, I mean, little me would be absolutely thrilled.
Yeah.
It's just explaining that little me just being like, but you do know it's like weirdly also highly stressful.
But it's also, well, that's good. You want to stress out little you.
Yeah, you always do. I mean, I already was.
But also, I had different ideas. I mean, it was like set as SNL, the movies.
Oh, yeah.
And then radio. You know, I always loved radio also. Yeah, I figured to be doing. There's no plan B for any of us.
No.
So there was no fucking option because technically, if I don't care, I can't do it.
I have no other skills.
I mean, I would be ecstatic. I mean, because I would have my only goals in life, which would be number one, not be in Rochester, Texas.
Did
like,
it?
That, number one.
Done.
Why?
That was number one.
Why?
That was it. Number two, have a job that I don't hate.
Done.
Done. Huge. You know, and, you know, have, you know, friends that I love and a wife that I love. And,
yeah.
You know, and a fucking massive record collection and a little device that gives me comic books, movies, books, and pornography.
Oh.
And it's this fucking thick.
So
that's incredible.
Natalie,
that's incredible. If you were to show, if you were to show a fucking iPad to 14-year-old me, I would lose my fucking mind.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's just stuff like that. But like, if I show little me how big my TV is,
yeah, it's like,
that's what would impress little me. It's not everything else. It's literally like if I showed him my television, he'd be like, you got a television that big?
TV.
It would just, I would hand myself a little thing. It's like, here's a device in which you can access almost every movie ever made, almost every TV show ever made, almost every comic ever published, and an endless supply of pornography that is free. Every book that's ever been published, everything is in this little tiny thing, and all you got to do is charge it up, and it's yours forever.
Maybe the only thing that I would be missing is like just kind of like sex bots.
Yeah, you wish you had full sex
robots.
But
you could get a sex bot.
Yeah, but I'm talking like a human.
Yeah, he wants one that talks and moves.
Okay.
See, I remember I asked
a partner.
Natalie and I asked, he wants somebody close. Yeah. I asked Natalie, I was like, so what do you ever envision, like when you were little, did you envision what your future husband be like?
And why
she's like,
would you do that?
But she said a bunch of like nice things. She was like, I thought that he'd be like, oh, he'd be smarter and like take care of himself and do what he, you know, like, you know, have things that he believed in. And she's like, what did you think? And I was like, you know, little me only ever was like, hope she's hot.
Yeah.
That's all
there
had.
You go. Fascinating.
That's all I had as a kid.
Yeah. I just wanted someone who I could get along with that liked the same things that I did. And I got that.
Yep.
That's me.
Well, isn't that nice? And Marcus, your final question.
My final question is, have you had any funny or unexpected reactions to your career from extended family or strangers?
They're all like, what?
Yeah. Now,
do what?
The nice thing is, once you buy your parents a fucking house, they love it. They're like, oh, what's this whole 666 Benjamin? That's fun. So yeah, they. I think I get a lot of mem. I got yes. People are very shocked.
I know
yeah.
that my mom ran into some people that knew me from high school, and I remember like talking. They're like, you know, like it's just incredible. He goes out there and he just says all those horrible things, and he just makes money doing that, I guess, right? And she's like, yes, that's what he does. Yes, it's his character.
Mm-hmm.
It's his character that he plays. It's not him.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, you know, which is I've been telling her for years. That's, you know, it's separate. We, you know, obviously it's like, you know, she knows. But it is interesting because then they're all like, well, I'm glad because we didn't know what else he'd do.
Oh, yeah. My parents thought it was all.
Definitely other people. My mom gave me the very high Polish Italian, like, deeply embedded misogyny about how men are able to do whatever they want, you know, that style. Mm-hmm. But like when it comes to this, it really was like he better be able to do that because yeah. that all he does is not pay attention to class.
I mean, I wanted to be an actor. I'm too big to be an actor. So you got to figure out some stuff.
Yeah, everyone back in Texas, you know, when I'd tell them they all know now what I do. And every time I seem like, oh, we always knew you were going to do something weird. You know, like,
yeah, that's like that. Nice.
Or they say like, it's you know, unconventional or, you know, and that was when I was, you know, leaving Texas. They were like, yeah, you know, we love you, but yeah, you need to go.
You need to go.
Like, you don't
yeah.
belong here.
You and don't I mean, belong in yeah. Rochester, Texas.
Everyone I don't belong it. In Texas.
Well,
in
I think
general.
The number one thing that we all share is our mothers all supported us. And we used to do the Shoestring Players when I was being homeschooled.
My mom did throw up when she saw Murderfest, and she wasn't really into all
yeah,
that stuff.
My mom
that's
doesn't.
That's
yeah.
also, but that's what I believe in the axiom of do art like your parents are dead.
Yes, because also you got that's what separate this. You can't do it every day. That's why it's special.
No, my mom loves what we do.
Your like mom she, loves it.
Like your she, mom loves.
Well, she actually.
My
she,
mom loves it now. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But your
well,
mom.
Yeah,
loves
but she
it.
Actually like listens every week. She actually sent me a series of pictures to show to you guys of an owl that got caught in a snake was attacking an owl, got caught in a snare, and a series of pictures of you know the owl getting you know removed
that's
and
cool.
you know and the snake. Yeah. And
it
she's
was
like,
cool.
She's like, why don't you go ahead and show those to Ben and Henry? They'll like those.
They did.
And they did.
Did
like
yeah,
them.
Yeah, they loved them.
Very cool.
Yeah, very
and,
cool.
Yeah.
And the owl's okay.
I got it. Oh, good. I got a DM from a friend recently saying, you know, you always had the vision and it's coming true. So that's good.
I just love doing the damn show. I don't want to keep doing the show
just
until
love doing
we're
the
all
show.
Fucking skeletons.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for these questions, y'all.
Guys, thank you guys for listening over the years. It's really been, we love it. We're still fucking, it's crazy. Like, thinking about like putting together this, after, you know, it's 12 years. Putting together the second half of our year of
13.
Like shows, like 13
years. 13 years. 13 years.
But then there's something about it. Like, it doesn't leave. Like, I'm still just as into it.
Yeah.
Like, I love doing the process of
Although
putting
I
together
have to
the
say,
shows.
Man, so much murder. Man, I got my buddy is staying with me. And holy, every time I walk into the kitchen, and then their mother beat him
See,
with the,
you,
with
I
the frying
like that.
Pan.
I'm still like that, though.
I
can
listen,
to all
but I'm just
crime.
Like. Well, I said, oh, that ain't good. But I have a hard time. I will say I have become slightly desensitized to the voice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
To
yeah,
the
yeah.
true crime voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then.
And then. Yeah. It's like, yeah. before it'd be like, and then what? And now it's just like, and then. You know,
You're
it'd be
like,
oh.
Yeah, I know.
We know. Get
you
on
get
with
him,
it.
Keith Morrison.
Where'd they bury the bodies? Mm-hmm. Keith Morrison, what an icon.
I love him. Yeah. I love him. But yeah, I'm still like that.
Yeah,
Natalie
man.
And I are both. Good Lord. The sounds, if you could just hear the sounds, because between Natalie, what she researches for Spun, and then now she got all into the cop body cam footage. I'm watching that shit now, too. I get really
it's
into
brutal.
Watching,
gives me a
watching
headache.
Karens get dragged around by cops is actually pretty satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Okay. Police brutality. I'm here for it.
Oh, God. No, it's just the, but I like the other thing. I just like all true crime. Watch, now I watch trials.
Yeah.
I sit and watch hours of trial footage.
Court TV can be very soothing.
I've been into interrogation videos also. You just learn a lot about people.
Well, you learn to fucking keep your fucking mouth shut and call a goddamn lawyer.
It's an interesting...
And put your hands up. Put your hands up. Say nothing. Get in the car. Don't fight against the man. Get in there. Call the lawyer immediately. That's all you got
to
do.
So just surrender to the police.
Then it literally surrenders to the police and then work it out after the fact.
You're gonna save yourself a lot of time in the long run.
You really are. And
really
a lot
are.
Of not getting your ankles chained together and your head bashed against the fucking window and
well,
shit.
Yeah,
none of us are doing anything that's going to get us taken to a black site.
I don't know yet.
We don't fine. Know. We simply don't know. We don't know. All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. And yes, hail yourselves, everyone, and be safe out there. And just be thankful that we're not, none of us, never, if Keith Morrison is doing a VO of your life, something has gone horribly wrong.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and yeah, so yeah. Make sure it never happens.
Yeah, just make sure you don't end up as a subject on our show.
Yeah, absolutely. Unless you find an alien.
They're great.
Proof of a ghost.
We've said that.
Yeah.
We've said that. That's 100%.
I'll say that again. Remember? Because I've had several people who were like, I'll kill many to get on the show. We won't cover you if you're a fan and you're killing. We're not going to cover you in a heavy hitter, just so you know. But if you find an alien or if you have any carcass of anything good.
So we've lowered it from alien to ghost to any carcass.
Any interesting carcass.
Interesting non-human carcass. Non-human carcass.
Great. Okay, everyone, thank you.
Bye!
Bye.
Hail Satan.
Lucas Legend?
He's still out there.
Oh, yeah, hail me. That's not hail me, that's him. Hail Gene.
He says hail me. You haven't said hail Gene in a while.
Oh, I say it every single week.
He does. He says it every week.
No, you actually missed it a couple of times.
I say it every week. Do I?
No, you didn't do it.
Well,
you
edit.
He says it. I mean, I'm a little tired of saying it at this point.
You shouldn't, though, but in the end, but it's...
But I gotta say it.
You have to say it. Are we gonna change?
No.
After all these years?
No, I'm not gonna be that. I'm not gonna be that person.
That changes.
I want to try a different artistic direction. It's like no. It's like
things gotta stay the same.
Do you think Metallica always likes playing Master of Puppets? Not all the time.
You know,
I don't think they like playing any of their songs anymore.
Well, I know that James Hetfield's stage fright is getting worse and worse.
It's terrible.
You're some kind of monster.
I watch it. I think the algorithm. They always send me pictures of him smoking his little cigar.
I watched an interview with, now this is a technical, we're still going, but it's fine. I watched an interview with the lead singer of, I believe it was not Megadeth. It was one of those other ones.
Not Dave Mustaine?
No, it was the other guy that's from another band, and Metallica wouldn't tour with him. And then he was like, it's because Metallica knows our audience would beat the fuck out of their audience. Oh. But then I think they're all the same audience.
They're all basically the same audience for the most part.
Slayer?
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, they might have just not gotten along.
I think they hated each other.
I think that they were both not easy.
Yeah, I think so.
At the time.
I agree. I think so now, too.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. They've only gotten more difficult.
Yeah.
I actually kind of prefer when they were drinking and destroying shit. Now it's all psychological.
Complicated people.
Very.
They're people, too.
Absolutely.
As are we.
All right,
bye.
I'm a person.
I'm a man.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.